Radio Prague News.
The foreign ministers of the Visegrad Group states in Germany have stressed the need for a diplomatic solution to the crisis in Ukraine. The Czech foreign ministry denies having received a ransom demand for the Czech taken hostage in Libya. And Usher King, the five-year-old British brain cancer patient who underwent proton therapy in Prague last year, is reportedly cured. The foreign ministers of the Visegrad Group states in Germany have stressed the need for a diplomatic solution to prevail in Ukraine. At the meeting in Bratislava, Slovakia, German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier said that while certain progress had been made in fulfilling the conditions of the Minsk peace deal, there were still groups violating the ceasefire agreement. All parties involved must avoid actions which could result in a fresh escalation of violence, the German foreign minister stressed. Foreign ministers likewise discussed the EU's Eastern Partnership program for six post-Soviet bloc countries, including Ukraine. Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek noted that in the light of the Ukraine developments, this program has acquired even greater significance. The Czech Foreign Ministry says it has not received a ransom demand for the Czech who was taken hostage along with eight other foreign workers in an attack on an oil field in Libya earlier this month. A ministry spokeswoman said the ministry had not been contacted by any group or individual claiming responsibility for the attack, nor had it received a demand for money. The ministry made the statement after the Austrian daily Kronen Zeitung claimed on Monday that Islamic militants had demanded $500,000 for the Austrian hostage, citing unnamed intelligence sources. The Austrian Foreign Ministry has denied the claim. The Czech Foreign Minister said earlier that according to Czech and Foreign Intelligence Services, the hostages were with high probability in the hands of the same group of radicals responsible for the assassination of 21 Egyptian Copts. Usher King, the five-year-old British brain cancer patient who underwent proton therapy in Prague last year, is cured of the disease, his parents told the media on Monday. The boy's parents, who were arrested in Spain for secretly taking the boy out of a Southampton hospital which did not offer proton therapy, said the decision had saved his life since he was too weak to come through chemotherapy. Usher, who underwent 30 sessions of protobeam therapy, is now reported to be cancer-free and is recovering well. The 120-vehicle strong US military convoy, which is expected to pass through Czech territory at the end of this week, is raising emotions on these social networks. Protesters, largely Communist Party members and sympathizers, plan to demonstrate against the transfer at a gathering on Wenceslas Square on Saturday, while its supporters urge the public to welcome the US troops with Pilsner beer and plan gatherings of their own in a show of solidarity with the undertaking. The convoy, returning from a NATO exercise called Operation Atlantic Resolve in the Baltic states, will travel through six countries to a military base in Germany. It will spend 4 days in the Czech Republic, taking three separate routes before regrouping in an outer Prague district and heading to Plzeň and the Czech-German border. Two members of the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra who were badly injured in Sunday's bus crash near Misselbach remain hospitalized in Austria, a spokeswoman for the orchestra told the CTK news agency. Their condition is reported to be stable. The other 11 people who were taken to hospital with lighter injuries were released and have now returned to the Czech Republic. The bus carrying 20 members of the Philharmonic was on its way back to Prague when it swerved off the road and crashed from a 7-meter slope. The driver had to be rescued by firefighters, and the police have not yet been able to question him due to his health condition. The case of the accident, therefore, remains unclear. The Czech Republic is said to be in need of more blood marrow donors, and the authorities have appealed to members of the public to consider the possibility. According to the health authorities, some 2,300 regular donors will have to be crossed off the register due to age or health problems before the end of this year. The age limit for blood marrow donorship is 55 years. Although last year 1,743 new donors signed up, which is the highest number in 11 years, Over the next 5 years, as many as 6,000 regular donors will have to be crossed off the list. Altogether, the register has 50,000 donors. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. After a cold and overcast weekend, the weather is gradually expected to improve, with Wednesday's temperatures reaching 18 degrees Celsius. I'm Danielle Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, Czech ski hill operators say the season, which is slowly coming to an end, was not a bad one, saying they will post profits. We'll have the latest in sport, including the latest on biathlete Gabriela Sokolova, who got a great result in the final race of the World Cup circuit. And a little later in the program, in one-on-one, we discuss various aspects of Czech foreign policy with Jakub Janda from the think tank European Values. Ski hill operators this year are fairly pleased with business, rating this winter and consumer interest a good side better than in 2014, which was one of the most dismal of seasons. After a slow start to little snow in December, conditions improved and some hills will keep runs open at least until Easter. Snowmaking remains in effect and runs are able to stay open even if there's now not much natural snow. Vladimir Kasík is the head of the company operating Špičák in the Šumava Mountains.
It's possible to make snow on 80% of runs. The highest expense is the cost of electricity. Other high costs are labour and the operation of snow grooming machines. The grooming machines aren't built to drive up tough ground, including rocks or other obstacles appearing where there is less snow, so maintenance also has to be factored into the cost.
Some lament that the conditions were not better in the run-up to the Christmas holidays as well. At the same time, that is far from surprising. It's understood that peak periods in the Czech Republic are January and most of all, February. Local hotels and other lodgings in the latter month are commonly booked weeks, or rather several months in advance. A white Christmas once in a while, though, wouldn't hurt. Filip Svrček is of ski areál Ješket.
It's a shame that we don't get more help from nature and that Christmas was a non-starter. The warm weather before the holidays kept most skiers away. Many of them opted for skiing abroad instead.
With the end of this year's ski season on the horizon, most operators this year can say they finished in the black. Petr Bažant of Ski Arena Jizerky in the Jizera Mountains told Czech Radio that after the slow opening, the rest of the season was on par with normal winters, unlike last year, which saw losses due to unseasonably warm weather. Skiers, including one 38-year-old mother of two, confirmed this season was superior to the last.
We went to the Jizera Mountains, which is close to Prague, the nearest mountain range close to Prague. We were worried that there would be no snow, but to our own surprise, there was lots of snow and nice weather and cold.
Better all-around conditions drove up interest in skiers who might otherwise opt for Austrian and Italian Alps. With Czech ski hills profiting, much of the revenues will go into paying off part of loans for long-term investments. Adam Svačina of Ski Areál Klínovec said this.
We will make a profit this season, but there was also a great deal of investment, with returns estimated in only 10 to 15 years. Much of the profits will go into paying off loans. We saw a rise in clients of about 30%, in part because of our newest run. We hope to reach around 180,000 clients by the season's end.
The season will still last a couple of weeks. Be sure to check hills online for runs as well as opening times to get skiing or snowboarding in. And staying with sport, including winter sport, I am joined now by Christian Stone for that.
We kick off this week's sports news with Gabriela Sokolova, who took a silver medal in the final biathlon World Cup event of the season, the 12.5 kilometres mass start. The Czech was just over 7 seconds behind Germany's Laura Dahlmeier. The second place put Sokolova sixth overall in the World Cup table, with fellow Czech Veronika Vítková in fourth position. In the men's competition, Czechs Ondřej Moravec and Michal Schlesinger also feature in the top 10, rounding off an excellent biathlon season for the Czech Republic. National coach Andrej Rybar says the sport now has a firm foundation to build on.
We want to maintain these results and keep biathlon in the position it has reached in the Czech Republic. We have to attract young sporting talent and become one of the top three biathlon countries in the world.
Speed skater Martina Sablikova notched up her 9th win in a row in the 3,000 metres World Cup event in Erfurt, Germany, to end the season in first place. Her only challenger on the points table, Dutchwoman Irene Wurst, was not in the starting lineup. Sablikova also won the mass start event at Erfurt, her second victory in the season, which meant that she was third placed overall in the event. In ice hockey, the last semi-final place in the playoffs has gone down the wire between Cometa Brno and PSG's Lyn. Lyn trounced the visitors 5-0 on Saturday. The reigning champions began at a blistering pace with 4 goals in the first 20 minutes, leaving Brno no way back into the match. The decider will be played on Monday night. Litvinov, Trinets and Sparta Prague have all qualified for the last four. In football, Victoria Pilsen maintained a 5-point lead at the top of the Senate League after a comfortable 2-0 win against bottom-of-the-table Slovan Liberec. The main title challenger, Sparta Prague, needed a controversial last-minute penalty against Teplice not to see the gap widen. Star striker David Lafata dived in the penalty area with the goal converted by Borek Dochkal. Dochkal later commented on the Sparta captain's penalty-winning stunt.
I don't know what happened on television. I haven't seen the images yet. I think it is a pity that after all that happened in this match, it comes down to speculation about whether it was a penalty or not. We should have tied this game up a lot earlier and put paid to that sort of speculation.
Staying with football, Czech national coach Pavel Verba has named strikers Tomáš Nedzid of Dutch team Zvolle and Sparta Prague's Václav Kadlec for the squad to face Latvia in the European Champion qualifier on March the 28th in Prague. Verba goes into the game with the Czechs at the top of the qualifying table with 4 wins out of 4. Latvia have so far only notched up 2 draws and are last but one in the table.
Chris Johnstone there with the latest sports results. Quick reminder, you're listening to Radio Prague. You can find many more stories, news items and features at our website, radio.cz. Also, Radio Prague is on Twitter and on Facebook. Now, in the final part of our program, Ian Willoughby meets Jakub Janda of the think tank European Values.
Why have Czechs evidently lost some faith in Europe in recent years? Does the Czech Republic have core foreign policies? And are there any consequences for the country's president and other officials not singing from the same hymn sheet on Russia? These are just some of the issues I discussed the other day with Jakub Janda, the 24-year-old deputy head of the think tank European Values. But my first question for Janda was, what exactly do think tanks do?
They can do a lot of things. Think tank started off during World War II when the Americans saw the propaganda coming from Nazi Germany and Japan as well. So their army needed to have some kind of unit of people who would be thinking what to do with the propaganda. So there it started off as a name, I would say. But in today's world, think tanks are like NGOs, non-governmental organizations. Usually, they just put together people who want to think and write about some issues which they think are important to them, and there are different kind of think tanks. European Values Think Tank is a non-partisan think tank, which means that we work with political parties, but we don't work exclusively for the one. And second, we are non-governmental, meaning that government hasn't funded us, or we do projects with the government or with the executive as well, but we are mainly not paid by the government. Therefore, we could be independent.
So how are you paid? How are you funded?
Mm-hmm. In 2014, around 40% of our funding came from Open Society Foundations, which is one of the foundations which is non-partisan, basically.
That's funded by the billionaire George Soros.
Yes, that's right. All over Europe, they fund a lot of stuff which is focusing on opening politics generally, and we've had some big projects with them on minorities and integration and immigration politics, on policies. And let's say about 30% of our funding came from some foreign institutions, such as the European Commission and the European Parliament. So those are like neutral, I would say, institutions. And the rest of it are other foundations. And as well, we've done several projects with the Czech government, so Ministry of Foreign Affairs or Office of the Government as well.
Well, your name, European mm-hmm. Values, mm-hmm. clearly shows what you guys are all about. Mm-hmm. In recent years, the Czech public seemed to have, to some degree at least, lost faith in European institutions, at least according to opinion polls, compared to immediately after the Velvet Revolution and around the time of EU accession. Why do you think there has been that decline in faith in Europe?
I would say it's been mainly because most of the Czech political parties and Czech politicians don't really understand EU politics. They don't take interest into it, and therefore they are not speaking about European politics. And I don't only mean EU politics, but international and European politics in particular. So that's a very big problem, since the leaders of the country are not paying attention to it and don't see how important it is for such a small country as Czech Republic is. So therefore, the public cannot be really on the same field with them or on the same boat with them. So this is a general problem, which is really systematic, I would say. The other, of course, is that we have had some real strong political figures, such as former President Václav Klaus, who was really against anything called EU. And therefore, he has let's say, shifted the discourse in a negative way. And there hasn't been anybody really strong, really publicly seen, who would be able to, of not really defending it, but only speaking about what is important for the Czech Republic as our national interest. So that's like kind of a systematic problem of our leaders, I would say.
And hasn't the economic crisis also been a factor in this? Because I think the downturn in faith in Europe followed the crisis.
Yeah, it has. It has, definitely. The other issue is that we don't pay with euros, so we are not members of the eurozone, so the problem of Greece and others hasn't been really our problem. If you compare it to the Slovakian case, they have really more interest into the Greek or Grexit even. It hasn't affected us in a realistic way, but it has affected the polls as well, because it wasn't only about the EU institutions, it was about other institutions as well, and the approval of the government and the parliament as a body. So it's not only about EU, because honestly said, Czechs have very little knowledge about EU, and it's the biggest problem of our politicians, because when the politicians don't speak about it, media don't cover it.
The Czech president Miloš Zeman is often accused of being pro-Russian. Why do you think it is that he takes this relatively non-mainstream position in Europe on Russia?
It has several roots, I would say. One of them would be his admiration for kind of a feeling of a strong hand which Vladimir Putin possesses. He is able of being really hard on his journalists and on his civic society. That's something what Miloš Zeman kind of admires, and he's publicly saying he likes it. Not in a sense of how Putin is doing it, but he likes it doing it himself in a Czech context. First, and the second one would be a populistic argument, I would say, in a sense that he knows that about 30, maybe 40% of the Czech public is really neutral, not really feeling as being part of the West and being part of the Western political culture, like feeling what liberal democracy is all about. He's speaking to this electorate. This electorate has helped him winning the elections in the past. So I think he is doing a part of his, potentially, not sure if his or somebody else's campaign for 2018 when there have been another presidential election.
Is there any consequence or cost for the Czech Republic when the foreign policy on Russia is so kind of unclear? You have Zeman, who's relatively pro-Russia. You have Zaralek, who's quite against, or at least he's more like the European mainstream. You have Sobotka, the prime minister, who's kind of on the fence. Is there any consequence of that unclear position?
There are several consequences. One is, let's say, the international brand of the Czech Republic, which definitely we are being seen as another Hungary, as another Putin's ally in the eyes of our allies, of our European or American allies, which isn't good. But it's only about the surface. The other issue is that Czech Republic and or even the Prime Minister and the government cannot really take strong positions or really deep positions on anything what what our government could have been doing with Ukraine, with the Kyiv government, not only giving their weapons but only helping them with the development aid, for example. So they can't do it when the president is so strictly against it. He's publicly saying he is against it, and therefore the Prime Minister and the Minister of Foreign Affairs, who are really they are both having a really Western stance, but they have to take a lot of time speaking to the president, and they are trying or having a lot of efforts in trying to not only persuade him but only stop him from saying those things. Because the other issue which Mr. Zeman or our president is doing, he's using a lot of propaganda used by the Kremlin. He's just repeating it, and there are so many lies he has already said in the previous year. So this really doesn't help the Czech position in the European context.
European Values, your think tank, is avowedly Havelite. On your website, you proclaim Havel to be one of your inspirations. We've read a lot in recent times about how Czech foreign policy has become more pragmatic, in quotation marks, under the current government, especially in terms of having a more friendly attitude to China. Some people say that the government has abandoned the country's principled foreign policy tradition stretching back to Václav Havel. But was Czech foreign policy ever really so principled, or was it just the kind of mood music with Havel meeting the Dalai Lama or whatever?
There are so many aspects of it. So I would look at some of them. First, of course, there's been a lot of support by the Czech government for human rights activists around the world. It still is over there. The question is whether the current Minister of Foreign Government of Foreign Affairs and its Deputy Minister, Mr. Drulák, isn't going to kind of crop the budget for these activities. It's not known yet, in a sense. So right now there still is a lot of support for these activities. So regarding the support for human rights, some members of the government are really supporting it or are really continuing in this trend, but some of them aren't. They are really pragmatic, such as Minister Mládek. But regarding Havel's position or Havel's let's say, legacy to our foreign policy, I would say that we still have it, that in a sense that even Mr. Babiš and the Prime Minister are talking about Havel's legacy, so that's good. So if we continue with it, it will be all right. Definitely the president isn't on the same side. He's on the other side of the road. He isn't really supporting it. The other issue is whether we are principled in a sense that it's not only a question of human rights, but it's only as well a question of being principled in a sense of, for example, Crimea, in a sense of annexation and occupation of some of the Ukrainian territories. Havel wouldn't have done it any time, but, for example, our president is currently doing so. He's supporting the Russian case. So that's the point where he's missing it, in a sense.
Is there any kind of core Czech foreign policy? It often seems to me that they simply react to what's happening, say, in Europe. They follow the mainstream European line a little bit slowly, a little bit behind the main movers, so as not to be totally left behind, but they will never take a first step on anything.
Well, that's right. We haven't had an initiative in basically none of the issues. If we had, it wasn't positive. It would be really negative in a sense what president has been doing or the Minister Mladek has been doing as well. We've been really reactive. You said it well, right. If you are asking where are the cores of the Czech foreign policy, I would say that some of them are really stable. One would be connection to the US, which this government is supporting really well, such as supporting TTIP as well. The other would be supporting of the state of Israel or the real strong connection with that. This government is continuing in this trend as well. They had some G2G summits as well, so no changes over there. The other would be this government is trying to get us kind of into the European mainstream, which might seem a bit metaphoric in a sense, but it has a lot of implications in practical policy. So in a sense, it's been much better than the Necas administration when they have been really, really negative in any EU policy. But currently, the government is at least not blocking some of the EU policies. So there's the first step. So I wouldn't expect anything else in a year. So it takes some time to see some changes, at least.
That was Jakub Janda of the think tank European Values. He was Ian Willoughby's guest in that edition of One on One. And that takes us to the end of today's program. I'm Jan Wellinger. For all of us here at the station, thanks so much for joining us, and take care.